did it, Mum! I played the theme tune on a little mini piano on my phone.
You are such an artiste, sir.
Bloody love that theme tune.
It's just good, isn't it?
You're definitely right, Tom. I think that they started with the theme tune first and then worked up a screenplay based on that.
That's the only reason I can see why this film, this series of films, got greenlit. That theme tune. Hello! Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast.
I'm Todd Jordan.
I am Tom Denny.
And we are here to watch a little movie called Police Academy 1, 2, 3, Back in Training.
Oh, yes, we continue our deep dive into the Police Academy franchise. The third outing, is it going to be good? Is it going to be bad? Well, we had a little taste with the trailer and, some stuff happened. So
there's a cartoon fly very, very prominently in the trailer.
On the Warner Brothers like logo, there's a cartoon fly buzzing around. You're like, hello, this is something we haven't seen before. And then you just cut to the cartoon fly buzzing around Commandant Lassard. He's back. And then we cut and see like a real fly on a woman's face next to him, and he just turns around and smacks her in the face to try and clobber that fly. And I'm afraid to say, me and Todd just, oh, we had a bit of a chuckle at that. I mean,
it doesn't sound funny.
It doesn't sound funny when you say, like, he punched a woman in the face.
But in execution, it's a bit of a thigh slapper, and I don't know why.
It was slapstick gold. I'm concerned that that's the best bit of the film.
Yeah, because the rest was a little bit weak. It had a lot of Michael Winslow making wacky sounds.
Yeah, great, yeah. Mike.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah, whatever, pal.
Hooks.
She blows her famous line, "Don't move, don't bag," again in the trailer.
I know, they got to stop making like the one thing that Hooks is potentially going to do, just putting it in the trailer.
Yeah, gang's all there, though. We got Spackler again, Mahoney, Sweet Chuck.
Yeah, so Sweet Chuck and Zed, who were kind of right, you know, like mortal enemies in the last film, with Zed being the leader of the gang and Sweet Chuck being the put-upon lampshaderie owner, they're both joining the police academy. So some hilarity is going to ensue there. I'm sure that Bobcat Goldthwait's probably going to shout a little bit.
Whoa.
Yeah, just, I mean, do you want to put on a bet? Or
I daren't. I might lose my house.
Yeah, okay, good call. And then just like montage, some capering.
Seems like it's maybe got a bit more plot than the last one. So there's definitely an element, there's something of Lassard being like, oh no, they can only keep one of the two police academies open.
We got to save the rec center, guys. It's that kind of film.
So everybody has to gang together. But what I don't understand is when they're like, how are we going to save it? There's a little clip where everyone goes, we're going to have to call Mahoney.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Mahoney is a fucking useless bellend who just hangs out on the beach like ogling babes. Why would you ever think that he would be the person to call?
I don't know. He really like bedazzled not Commandant, the other Lassard.
That's true.
In the last film, that like he just said some shit and he's like, you know what, Mahoney, you got your head screwed on, you know what's going on. And it's just a weird backwards universe.
If you met Mahoney in real life, it just kind of feels like people make him their leader.
Yeah, and I would just feel unsafe in that world, because he is a policeman. He's in like a position of authority, and other people in positions of authority, higher ranking than him, are saying, you know what we really need? We need Mahoney. I just don't know. I just think that's folly.
Well, let's give him a shot, right? Let's see if he can pull it out the bag and save the rec center.
I assume that the police academy is going to be closed down and burnt to the ground, and everyone's going to turn around and look at Mahoney and be like, you let us down, Mahoney. And he's going to go, wah, wah,
wah. Well, it's the perfect setup for Police Academy 4, Crying Amid the Rubble.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that one. That one's going to be really good.
An unusually bleak entry in the series.
Yes. Like Michael Winslow just spends the whole time like making like the sound effects of barren, windswept wastelands and things like that, like tumbleweed going by. And everyone's just like, God, you're bringing us down, Mike. More so than usual. So we should probably get cracking on this pretty soon.
I'm so ready to do that.
But before...
I'm pounding my chest. That's the sound of me pounding my chest, getting pumped.
Don't pound it too much, Todd, because you will run out of energy for playing the IMDb guessing game.
Whoa, I better wind down a bit. Hang on.
Wind it down.
I'm unpounding.
Okay.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, so... Police Academy 3, Back in Training. This film was released in 1986. The last one, Police Academy 2, their first assignment, 85. The first one, 84. So it's one a year.
Oh, I love that lightning pace.
Yeah, you don't get that these days. So they've short turnaround on this one.
Comedy is all about timing, Tom.
Yeah, yeah. The timing is usually like one year between gags. So their first assignment got 5.6. And the high of the series is the first one with a 6.7. What do you think, based on that trailer, that Police Academy 3 has been rated on IMDb?
5.9.
Oh, babe. It's 5.2. It's still... The slope continues.
But this one already looks better than the last.
It does, doesn't it? Which is worrying. It's either like IMDb has got it wrong... Which it has sometimes. Sometimes we've watched, you know, films and been like, actually, that's nowhere near as bad or as good as that rating.
Yeah, yeah, true. Or maybe we're the ones that got it wrong.
But. Yeah, or, yeah, maybe the effects of this film series or just like this whole podcast endeavor in general is rotting our brains that we see. I mean, we did really have a big old chuckle watching a man punch a woman in the face because he was trying to swat a fly. And so maybe... Maybe we're at fault here. Maybe it's not Police Academy's fault. Should we go?
Sorry, Tom, I got distracted thinking about the theme tune.
Yeah, no.
It was a great speech. But...
I have absolutely no idea where I was going with that. Should we just go home?
Let's slam into the movie, motherfucker!
Well, we're back, we've watched it, and we're definitely high energy.
I'm
no one can
so
take
high.
That away from it. Oh, fuck it, no.
No, we tried to force it, guys, we tried to force it. This movie wasn't bad, better than the second one.
Yeah, definitely.
More of the same, basically, but like, it's just beating me down a little bit. It's not hurt me or damaged me, I just feel lethargic.
Yeah, I just feel kind of... A little bit too sleepy, you know, like just like I'm just drifting off on the sofa.
Well, they've doubled the amount of characters.
Oh my God, there's
so
many.
They've doubled them. They've kept all the originals. They've thrown in as many more. And
yeah.
In like an 88-minute movie, tops, which basically means that every single character gets about 10 minutes of screen time.
Yeah, there's...
So they don't really do much.
No, yeah, you... Gutenberg has been like the hero in these films, but like he's not on screen a whole heap.
No.
And the things he does, like he doesn't have any like real big kind of set piece kind of gags, I don't really think.
No, he's just there to deliver rousing speeches, which he does twice.
Yeah, twice he does a shit rousing speech, like classic Mahoney shtick. And he's also just turned into like a real sex pest.
Yeah, when we first see him here, he's teaching like a girls' basketball team.
Yeah.
And just like perving over all the girls.
Yeah, he's like, he like takes a knee and it's like, hey, come on, huddle around. He's like, oh, huddle a little bit closer.
Oh, wow.
And like there's, we get like another, like, well, let's just start from the beginning here.
Fuck it. Let's just throw caution to the wind. Let's just say, hey, what the hell? We're just a couple of crude dudes, you know? We're just chatting some shit about Police Academy 3. What the fuck? Let's just start at the beginning. Who's going to stop us? Who's going to stop us?
No one. Yeah. No one. We are lawless.
Just try.
So you know what happens at the beginning? There's no opening kind of like setup, like, you know, like placard like we've had. There's no mention of what the radical Lady Mayor has been up to this time. Instead, we just go straight into a car park with Mauser. He's back with his stooge Proctor, and basically they found out that he's now Commandant Mauser, and he's running a police academy, and the city has two police academies.
Which
or like the state, or maybe the state has two police academies. So he's like running the rival police academy to Lasard.
Sure, like that's a weird situation anyway. Yeah. They're not like...
But, well, someone's trying... The governor is trying to rectify this by being like, we don't need this many police academies. We will close one down. The police academies are going to have an inspection. The best one wins. Like that's so that's the story. And he's Mauser's got some boys on the inside at Lasard's gaff. So he's like, I need you guys to nose up Lasard's biz. You get me, lads? And they're like, nah worries, Mauser, nah worries.
Yeah, and
thus ensues 80 minutes of what some people might consider jokes.
Well, yeah, I mean, and in that's it, that's the gist. So Lasard, for some reason, he's made a long career of running this police academy. When he finds out it's in trouble, his instant thought is, only one person can help me, one of the worst recruits I've ever had. Let's get bloody Goots back in.
Yeah.
And then like he's like, okay, I need Goots. So Goots comes, but all of his mates also apparently quit their beat jobs as just like being a regular normal cop, you know, the thing they've trained for.
Well, yeah, apparently you can just like drop your post as a policeman like at the drop of a hat because like some weird old boy with a goldfish fetish is like, I could really use you to come and help me save my school.
But even so, he only wanted Gutenberg. So why is Hooks there? Why is Hightower there? Why is Michael Winslow there?
Well, I think he wanted... Gutenberg was the first call, but then like there's a bit where he's like, oh, the greatest recruits we've ever had. And it's kind of like...
They were shit.
Yeah.
The whole point is they were shit, mate.
Like, this city must have just been some, like, lawless hellscape, I'd assume. Like, and then what? Like, suddenly the presence of Steve Gutenberg saved the city?
I guess.
It's not a world I want to live in.
Yeah.
To be honest.
That is a bleak indictment of the Lady Mayor's running of that town.
So, but crucially, we're now back at the police academy, but now the gang are the trainers. They're like training a new batch of recruits. Callahan is back. So she was like the tough, like aviator shades wearing trainer from the last time.
She's only in the first one.
First one. No Harris. You can't have Harris and Mauser in the same film. That's just too much.
It's too much. I think I prefer Mauser.
I think I'm more of a Harris man myself.
Are you?
Ooh. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Harris coming back. Not that I don't like Mauser. I like his big, wide face. It's a weird face.
It's
a weird old face. So they're back. And then thus ensues just a lot of, you know, skits and minor set pieces and stuff. So Mahoney, going back to him and his perving, there's no Kim Cattrall. She didn't get the call. They're not going to give her a ring. So we've got like a substitute Kim Cattrall recruit who Mahoney's like, I'm going to try and pork you.
Which he basically just says, yeah, she's a younger blonde lady. Her name's Adams. I looked it up. And he meets her and is like, oh, I'm going to be your teacher and I'll just assign you your bunk. Hey, it looks like we're sharing a bedroom. Straight away, that should be a disciplinary.
Yeah. Well, she's kind of like, no, could you stop perving on me? He's like, yeah, okay. And then she walks away and he's like, the things I would do.
Oh,
he's a wrong in that Mahoney. He's the villain of the piece. Well, maybe he's not the biggest villain of the piece. That's still probably Michael Winslow.
Tom, what does Michael Winslow get up to?
He makes some sound effects.
But even he's got more screen time, and even his tedious shtick of like, oh, I'm going to make sound effects, he's doing less of that. We get like a repeat sort of kung fu sequence.
Yeah, I think that.
But he just does some kung fu.
He just does some kind of like his kind of like I'm talking like I'm being dubbed by somebody else thing. It's like, yeah, that's great. We saw that in the last one. We've got him like making noises when like Mauser's trying to talk to like, you know, like the big head honcho, and like Mauser suddenly like thinks that he's making weird noises. And it's like, no, Mauser, you're a grown man. You know, you should know what sounds are coming out of you. Like, Jones isn't a fucking warlock.
It's mental. Like, and as soon as Michael Winslow starts making the crazy, wacky gorilla sounds while Miles is speaking, he, like, stops speaking and covers his mouth and was like, that was me. But, like, he wouldn't have stopped speaking when he heard the other sound. He would have kept speaking.
He would have talked over it.
Oh, yeah, so now Winslow's the one that's looking weird, just making random gorilla noises.
Maybe Winslow does have some sort of strange powers. Maybe we've, like, his character actually, like, he can throw his voice. He can, like, possess people. That's the only way that joke works, if there's magic involved.
I think I know what it is, and I think that, you know, there's that big fountain on the site of the police academy, right in the middle there. So I think that fountain actually is part of a reservoir, which is all of the drinking water on the academy. And the only thing that makes sense to me is that Michael Winslow is spiking that with massive doses of LSD every single day.
Yeah, I think what that makes makes things like Mahoney's shit speeches, like really landing and like really changing people's, like, they've got to be kind of have their consciousness altered in some way to just, because also Mahoney, when he does his speeches, he's very touchy feely. He always goes up and like rubs everyone on the shoulder.
Yeah,
because
I'm just feeling the love tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, I bloody love you.
Yeah, and then that's why everybody loves Mahoney so much, and that is why no one is questioning why you just have why the worst recruits you've got there. Like, he's like, no one has said, Lady Mayor, we're all for equality, but fucking Bobcat Goldthwait's back. He was the baddie in the last one. He's definitely not going to work out here. And then, but yeah, he kind of does.
Here he comes. Yeah, so this is a crucial point. Though he's part of the new recruit, Bobcat Goldthwait, the gang leader.
The gang leader from the last movie. He's back. He's reformed.
They don't really...
That is it.
Yeah, someone's just like, wasn't he the baddie in the last movie? And they just go, oh no, he's a reformed citizen now. And there's no bit where he goes, yeah, I want to be a policeman. He just goes, yep, I'm a people person.
It just seems to be something that everybody that lives in this, in, you know, like, Citiesville of USA, just like, they're just going like, well, guess I better go be a policeman now. There's absolutely nothing else going on in my life. So yeah, like, Zed is back, and
he gets put with his foil,
Sweet Chuck.
Yeah,
who's now, like, you kind of get Sweet Chuck maybe wanting to be a policeman more, because he's a bit more like, was it Barbara in the
and also Sweet Chuck had his life saved.
Yeah, he's like tired of being pushed around. He wants to kind of like clean up the streets and all that. Whereas, yeah, fuck knows why Zed's doing it. He's a people person, and then yeah, so like, Zed in this film, when Bobcat popped up in the last one, I was like, I remember liking Bobcat from like the bits and pieces that I saw of these films, like when I was a kid. I think also in the same way that I probably quite liked Michael Winslow's shtick, I probably quite liked a lot of like the characters' bits that they do.
Yeah, kids are dumb.
Kids are fucking dumb, man.
Kids are idiots.
Yeah, you know what? If I could go back in time and find little 7-year-old me, I'd slap him round the face like, you're a fucking idiot.
It's not funny.
Read a book.
It's not funny, Tiny Tom.
Yeah, no. Because, Zed's not really funny. I mean, there's something still kind of lovable about him in a way, but like...
Well, it's just the kind of...
It's literally just shouting. There's scenes that he obviously ad-libs, like where he's like playing the bongos to Sweet Chuck. He's like,
hey, this one's of my new album. Do you like reggae?
And you're just kind of like, well, this was obviously, you know, like an ad-lib scene. And this was the best they got.
Like, it's so weird, isn't it? We've talked before about how with comedy, I'll watch a comedy I love on my own and I won't really laugh out loud very much. Like, maybe occasionally if something's really funny. But then normally with, like, if you watch comedy with your friends or other people, you laugh a bit more, like, out loud.
Mm.
But I cannot picture a scenario where people are watching this film in the cinema, even.
No.
And actually audibly laughing more than twice in the whole movie.
Well, we laughed, I think, twice in this film. I think once we kind of chuckled again when Lasard smacks that woman in the face trying to get a fly off of her.
Which they show twice because they bring it back during the end credits.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't be funny.
It shouldn't be funny, but there's very slim pickings. So the other bit, and I didn't do this on the last episode, but I feel that this one deserves a medal of honour, like, you know, for actually being like a funny bit in the film.
Lay it on me, Tom.
The very end, after like the big, like the film is very much like the previous ones in that there's just like skits for like 80 minutes and then about 10 minutes of like stakes and like a mild peril, in which case, you know, the gang triumph and they save the day. And they save the day and everyone's crowded around Mahoney and he's got like, hey, thanks so much. I'd really like to thank, but whoever was doing the editing, they cut Mahoney off mid-sentence and it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I just love the idea of them in the editing room and they're just like, whoops, my finger slipped. And then off mic, they're just like, oh, fuck Mahoney.
Yeah, they just brutally cut him off, like, mid-sentence.
It's weird. Yeah, it's supposed to be his big rousing speech. He's like, thanks, everybody, all of you, at the next event. Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, like, because obviously they just were kind of like, oh, we'll shorten that. Just like, hey, thanks, everyone. But they couldn't, there was just no way of cutting it where it seemed like the natural end of a sentence. So it's just, they're just like, we're just going to have to fucking stomp all over Gutenberg's balls on this song. It's like, yeah, that's my little medal of. I just want to, you know, pin something shiny on whoever was doing the editing on that.
You said
because it was fucking hilarious.
You said there was another laugh. What's the other laugh?
No, that was it.
Oh, that was it.
Yeah, it was that and a woman being hit in the face, which I do not feel good about.
Okay.
So, oh God, did we make a mistake picking Police Academy?
I don't know, man. I'm interested in it. I'm interested in what they're doing. So they've introduced a lot of that's most of the returning characters, right? So yeah. We also have Hightower, who doesn't really do much.
He's got more lines in this because he just basically said nothing in the other films, but like he's gotten more lines. Spackler is back,
which we've worked out either they've changed it slightly in this film or this is maybe more likely we've been making a mistake from the start. The end credits list him as Fackler with an F. I was convinced it was Spackler.
Me too.
Do you think maybe it's that his name always was Fackler but they gave him the nickname Spackler?
I think we're reading too much into this here, right?
I think
we done goofed. Or maybe they got it wrong. They probably did. They were turning these films out pretty quick. Continuity errors are bound to happen when you're trying to turn these films out in the space of a year. Anyway, he's back.
Yeah, Spackler Fackler.
Also with way more lines than he ever had before. But you also know who else is back? His wife, the one he kept on getting hit in the vagina and got like stuck on the bonnet of a car. Like
Mrs. Spackler Fackler.
Yeah, probably one of the stronger comedic moments of the first film. And she's like, I want to go and join the police academy so I can spend more time with you, my husband. And she does, and then you never see the two of them on screen together at all.
Well, she is quite a tragic figure because, yeah, she's like, we're supposed to be a partnership. I want to hang out with you. And he is just the most awful husband in the world. He's like,
oh, yeah.
He literally locks her in the house because he's like, no, that sounds like it would be difficult.
Yeah.
You're staying in there.
He actually is like, no, I'm the breadwinner and you're my little lady and your place is in the home. At which point we said, fuck you, Fackler, if that is your real name. And then she like just like, well, there's another door to this house. I will leave that way. And then we get like this callback to like her being on the bonnet of the car in the first film, but with the roles reversed, which was kind of nice. So that's like, that was callback number one in this film, because the film likes doing callbacks. I just can't imagine. I mean, I guess it's weird watching it now, like in the context of today, that I guess this was like a very big hit at the time. But I just can't even imagine this came out 3 years after the first one that anyone would really remember, like all the jokes that they do callbacks to, or, you know, some of them.
Yeah.
One in particular that I...
we'll get to that one. You guys might know what it's going to be, but we will get to it. But yeah, so then we get Mrs. Spackler Fackler does the ride on the bonnet of the car. Oh, no, wait, she drives the car.
Yeah, she drives the car.
Mr. Spackler Fackler is on the bonnet. Get the repeat scene.
So obviously Tackleberry is back. He is more insane than ever. Like when we're introduced to him, he's basically hanging out, I think, in his parents-in-law's garden, having gone full First Blood Part 2 Rambo, that he's in there just like he's in Nam. Like, he is completely unhinged now. And his brother-in-law goes and joins the Force. And he was the guy who just really liked punching his dad.
I have a question. Isn't it weird that this movie features Tackleberry's father-in-law and brother-in-law, but not his wife?
It's very weird. I was thinking about this because there's a load of other people that kind of come back. So I'm wondering if Mrs. Fackler was the same actress, because we also get like a callback with the prostitute that gave Lasada blowy. She's back in the film.
Yeah.
And I don't know. And like, you've always got like the same like head of the police force guy kind of coming in and overseeing. So there's quite a bit of like continuity, like with like characters coming back. So
I've got more characters than Game of Thrones.
I know, but like they don't kind of like recast anybody, and they bring, you know, they bring people back after like, you know, like being out for a film. So I'm just thinking, like, do you think that would they have had her in it, or do you think the actress just wasn't available and they wouldn't cast another Mrs. Tackleberry, because they'd be like, no, a year's gone by. It's only been a year. We can't recast. People will be like, it'll take people out of the world of the film if, like, people are changing faces.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe she'll come back in the next one.
Because
she's a beat cop, right? She's a real regular cop.
She was.
She had no attachment to the Academy, so it doesn't make sense that...
Yeah.
You know, I understand why she wouldn't come to the Academy, but I thought we'd see a little bit of Tackleberry's home life.
Yeah, that seems like a bit of a missed opportunity. I mean, we've just been talking about this for a few minutes, and I'm pretty sure she's probably not going to come. She's not going to come back, is she? They've forgotten her.
I think she's coming back, Tom.
Okay.
We'll find out next time.
Okay, good. Anyway, we've got Tackleberry's brother-in-law in the meantime, and his gag is that he punches people.
Mainly his dad, in a loving way.
Yeah, that's a gag. Hooks is back. Hooks has had like... character development.
Love me some Hooks. She's a lot more confident now.
She's a lot more confident. Like, in the first film, she had to do like the driving obstacle course, and she went around it very slowly, was very timid. This time, smashing it.
Yeah, totally. She has a great time, and she's like, you know, really coming into her own as a teacher, and you know, raises her voice. We get a repeat of the classic freeze dirt bags line. That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Who else is in? There are some other... There are characters that are introduced at the beginning of the film that you literally never see again. There's like this really like posh guy that for some reason thinks that Hightower is like a bellboy or something like that. Like, he's like a porter.
I think the implication is that this man is racist.
Yeah. Speaking of racist characters...
Oh, okay. So, yes, there is a... very, very broadly drawn Japanese exchange student. This is a character called Nogata, who has been sent from a Japanese academy, I guess, as like part of the exchange program.
He sleeps on a bed of nails.
Because the producer of this film can't tell the difference between India and Japan. He, of course, knows karate. Of course he knows karate. His English is... terrible at the start, to the point that he tells people that they have a lovely wife when he hasn't even met their wife and things like that, like lots of hilarious.
Oh, hilarious.
Like, but then moments later, when someone asks him a question about karate, he launches into this incredibly eloquent speech explaining it all. There's no consistency. One fun fact about Nagata is the actor that plays Nagata voiced Leonardo in the original Ninja Turtles movie.
Did he?
He did.
Okay, I like that fact. Good on you.
I had to get one fun fact.
That's a good fun fact. I like that movie.
Nagata...
He doesn't really do a lot.
No, I'll tell you what he does is he falls in love with Callahan.
Oh, he does.
The tough blonde lady.
She's obviously murdered Georges Martin.
Yeah.
By motorboating him to death. Because she just seems to really like... There's a lot of scenes of her motorboating.
Well, being motorboated. Yeah, well, yeah. With all these small men where she just like... grabs their heads and just like rams them in between her boobs and wiggles them around and just has a massive smile on her face. She's loving it. And then in the next scene, when they're in a completely different place, that's like in her bedroom, fine, whatever you do, you know, up to her, that's great. Then in the next scene, they're like out at an event and he's still doing it and she's loving it. Yeah. Like, more power to her. But, like, you know, she found her thing. She's living her dreams.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like there are too many characters here for the number of jokes that those characters warrant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, could none of these... Did they need to have that many characters to make that many gags work? Could they have not worked for some already existing characters? Could they have not done more with other characters? Because, yeah, like, Goots is just... He is just not there.
He's coasting, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it must have been... I mean, this is like... Because I know he does leave the franchise, I think. So I wonder if it's just like... him kind of being like, yeah, I'll come back for some more. Like, he just kind of doesn't want to do as much, which is why you get people like Hightower and Fackler and Hooks getting more screen time and more biz. When did Lasard's goldfish fetish become like a... It wasn't in the first film, and then it was in the second film, like it had always been there. And like, yeah. And now in this one, it's basically all he... All he does, like, that, like, ride around in a golf buggy and just be befuddled.
They definitely seem to be implying that, like, Lasard's mind has just broken in this film. Mm. Like, everything he does is completely surreal and way more, like, that kind of Leslie Nielsen school of comedy. Like, we always said he looked like Leslie Nielsen, but now he's actually kind of acting like Officer Frank Drebin and just doing weird, out-of-step, surreal stuff. And he never did that before, and...
Mm.
It's just sort of the sad portrayal of a guy fading from his best, isn't it? An older gentleman towards the end of his career.
He's a bit of a sad character, isn't he? Where's his brother at?
Well, his brother's running that actual precinct. Yeah, he's running the precinct, he's not part of the academy.
That's true. So, I mean, we're not really talking about plot because there isn't really any. So, like, we've got like, so, like, as we said, Mauser is back. And Mauser is running his other police academy, which is very different to the one that we know and love, where the gang hang out. You know, like, there's no jolly japes there. Mauser spends his time walking around looking either like, I don't know, Colonel Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. He looks like a military dictator. The recruits aren't dressed like policemen. They are dressed like Nazi brown shirts. Like,
it's
like,
yeah,
full on. There's a bit where they have a policeman's ball, which is... There are some gags. They're not necessarily all that good.
The gags are important.
The best bit is that there's a musical number, right?
Oh, yeah.
And where we get a returning character from the first film, Tackleberry's saxophone.
I love Tack Sax. It's so great because he wears these white gloves, and the actor that plays Tackleberry can actually play the saxophone. This is really him doing it, and he's just like really like wailing on the sax, like proper 80s, but he's doing that thing where he's like grinding his pelvis, yeah, and just like really feeling it. And once again we get this really kind of like this look in his eyes, like there's a schism in his personality.
He's dark. He's a dark man.
Yeah, and I just feel like it's... any listeners that may or may not have seen the Clive Barker film Nightbreed, okay, this is a potential spoiler for Nightbreed, but it happens within the first 15 minutes, so I'm going to give it away. David Cronenberg's character that he plays in Nightbreed is sort of a normal man in a suit, and then occasionally when he's about to kill someone, he puts on this scary bag head mask. And so it's just like, okay, well, I'm transforming into my dark personality now. The bag head goes on so that the killing can begin. And I really feel like Tack Sax, that is his like bag head mask. It's like he's struggling to maintain the facade of being a normal law-abiding man every day,
which he isn't even doing, because
veiled. The mask slips all the time. Then in the night, especially when he's had something to drink, he's like maybe at a party or a policeman's ball, he's just like, I can't keep it off anymore. The sax comes out and he's like, hello darkness, my old friend. And then he just starts grinding, whips himself up into a frenzy. And that's when, like, the gun strapped to his dick goes off and...
Oh, yeah.
People get hurt.
We don't see that in the film. I think that might be a director's cut, like an extended edit. But that is there. Like, the mania of Tackleberry is... in every scene he is in, it permeates that scene, that like this man is like one push away from wearing your skin as a mask.
Oh yeah,
like 100%
stuffing your thigh bones into his saxophone.
So anyway, he's there doing tax sax, and then you've got Callahan and Hooks do a musical number with backing vocals by Sweet Chuck and Hightower, the comically, like, you know, like little and large duo. And then they just keep on cutting to Mauser's boys, and just like them all just like stood around looking stony faced, like in a big gang. It's a little bit chilling. Like, they do look like they just look like Nazis.
Yes, and I hate them to hell.
Exactly.
Like, the purpose of this scene is obviously to make us be like, well, all right, the gang are a little rough and ready around the edges, but they know how to have fun, right?
Yeah, and Mauser's boys don't know how to have fun. The bar scene has quite a good Mauser bit in it.
Oh, yes, do please regale.
So the guys all in the bar after they've gone and fucked up. They went out on patrol too early, and the people who are like seeing which police academy is going to survive, you know, saw them do some stuff that they didn't do it right. And Mahoney's there doing a shit speech, kind of like, "Hey guys, we could do better." And everyone goes like, "Mahoney, you're so inspiring." As usual, Mauser shows up in like, you know, plain, like it's plain clothes day at the police station. He's just like, comes in and just like a hoodie.
He's dressed like your dad's mate that hangs out outside the betting shop.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah,
that's what he looks like. And like, he comes in and they have like a little bet that involves Mauser being blindfolded with gaffer tape.
It's because Mauser's drinking champagne to celebrate their failure and rub their noses in it. So he goes to the bar and orders champagne. And Goots is like, "Oh, I bet, what are you drinking that champagne for? That's a waste of money. I bet you can't even tell the difference between champagne and beer." That's the origin of the bet. So they blindfold him with gaffer tape. And he's like, "Of course I can tell the difference between champagne and beer."
And then, like, Gutenberg, he's playing the long game. He's like, "Ha-ha, this was not the intent of my plan here." And then he pulls off the gaffer tape and it takes off Mauser's eyebrows. And then he's got to like paint eyebrows on for like the rest of the film, which is kind of funny because he like puts on these like big stick-on fluffy eyebrows that make him look a bit like Eugene Levy. Like, you know, just like broom handles.
Yeah. And there's a couple of funny bits where they fall off.
Yeah, there's a bit where they fall off, and there's a bit where Proctor like paints on some like very like effeminate like light eyebrows. The only thing is, like, during all of this, his eyebrows are there. They've just got some makeup over them, and they're fucking plain as day. Like,
any other film, they would have just shaved the dude's eyebrows, slung him an extra 20 quid. And shaved his eyebrows off.
Or done
for real.
A better job covering them. Like, but they're just there. He's just got big. He's still just got eyebrows. Just kind of really takes you out the gravitas of the scene.
Had you seen this in the cinema, you would have stood up and just pointed at the screen and been like, "You lie!
This is unbelievable!" And then I would storm out and get my money back. So yeah. That was a gag that was kind of like, you kind of watch that one and go, "Huh." Kind of works on paper. So, callbacks. We've already mentioned, obviously, we've got Mrs. Fackler Spackler. We've had the prostitute who gets into kind of like a bit of a caper with Proctor.
Oh, yeah. We should hear a little about the caper with Proctor, because it's got an ending that's worth mentioning.
Yeah, well, Proctor's being a dick at the policeman's ball, and obviously at a policeman's ball, you would expect a prostitute to be, like, in attendance. She's just hanging out. Well, probably because she's always, like, boning Lasard or Gutenberg by the sounds of it. And then Gutenberg's like, "Ah, Proctor's a bit of a dick. Can you kind of, like, give him the runaround a bit?" So she kind of gives Proctor the come on. They go up to a bedroom. He gets all his kit off. And then she's like, "Oh, can you just go and wait out in the hall while I, you know, while I slip into something more comfortable?" And then just locks him out. And then he's just kind of like running around comically and going, "Oh, I'm naked. Oh, I'm naked over here." And he goes out into the street.
He's naked there as well.
He's naked everywhere. And he just needs to find somewhere that he can just be naked and safe. peace and quiet. Where does he find Todd?
Where does he find his safe space? Well, he goes into an unmarked door on the street, as I would if I was a naked man.
Yeah.
And he discovers that he's in a familiar place. It is the Blue Oyster Bar, that gay bar from the last two films.
Full of, like, leather bondage, ballroom dancing, predatory gay men.
One of them actually has, like, a full-on, like, full
gimp
head.
Gimp mask,
like,
yeah.
Like, fucking Pulp Fiction or something.
Yeah.
It's like a step up. And he's just there, kind of quivering, naked and vulnerable.
Oh, it's always a funny one, isn't it? The trip to the Blue Oyster Bar.
Mm.
It's always a joke that's dated really well.
And you know, the first rule of comedy is that every joke gets funnier the more times you hear it. And we
obviously
are 3 for 3 now on the already very, very, very appropriate joke of all gay men are awful predators that will literally have sex with anyone that comes near them.
Yeah, regardless of consent, but also like ballroom dancing.
Of course they do, Tom. Of course they do.
Yeah.
But, I really think it's time for them to fucking stop this shit with the Blue Oyster Bar now.
No, look, the thing is, like, now
it's the one consistent thread we've got.
I know.
Really.
So, but I'm wondering whether it's gonna like that they're going to like when they go to like the one in Miami that they're going to go to like that you find that the Blue Oyster Bar is a chain, and then they go into like the Blue Oyster Miami.
Now, I don't like this joke. Obviously, I think we've made that quite clear. It's not a good joke, and it's not very well handled. The only way it will have any amount of payoff is if they go beyond that. They stick with it in every movie, and I cringe through it, and I'm like, oh, oh, oh. Until we get to the last film of the season, Mission to Moscow. And in Moscow, they go to the Russian version of the Blue Oyster Bar, and who should be bartending but a young Vladimir Putin? That's the only way that it'll possibly pay off.
Well, we'll have to wait and see how that pans out.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't really think so. So, there's that's kind of like most of like the fannying about that goes on between the film starting and the, oh, I want to say 15 minutes worth of boring jet skiing that goes on at the end of the film.
Yeah, because the denouement of this piece is a very, very long jet ski chase. So they go to a regatta, which is a fundraising competitive boating event in order to...
The governor is there.
As the governor is ordered to get a big cash injection for his next campaign. And what's happening is Mauser's crew just want to go for a bit of a jolly and enjoy their inevitable victory.
It's the last day of the competition and they feel that like their streak's ahead. It's in the bag.
Yes. But remember sexy grandpa from the first film who kind of is inexplicably introduced as a villain right at the end? Well, he's apparently out of jail. He's back.
Or,
we only know, maybe
or
someone
else. Or he's a different character.
But it's the same actor.
It's the same actor who played the villain who suddenly appears at the end of the first film. In the credits for both films, I believe his name is Axe Murderer, despite the fact he does not murder anybody and is never seen with an axe, as far as I am aware. So he's now like a terrorist with... They're introduced so quickly that there is no agenda. Like,
what do they even want?
They want to kidnap the governor because... Because they're still really stewing over that fucking Apple riot.
Yeah, that's probably it. But they're like stealing people's jewels and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the call comes through that, like, shit is getting real at the regatta. And
who's going to answer that call?
Well, they both sides, the goodies and baddies, get the call. Mauser, with his pride, with his hubris and his folly, he's like, don't bother yourself, Proctor. That's the, like, the goodies trying to, like, trick us into making a fool of ourselves in front of the governor. So let's just go and we'll just go slowly and, like, drink some more champagne and meet the governor. Whereas, you know, the goodies, they all, like, rally together and they save the day by riding jet skis.
It's a very, very long jet ski
chase. Like, I don't know
chase.
How you stop the people with gun. They just ride jet skis and then...
Until the chase stops. It just stops.
Yeah.
Hook says, freeze dirtbag again.
And it just, it stops then.
Oh, and then, yeah, and then Mahoney says, like, well, I couldn't have done it without... Cut him off. Cut that. Enough, yeah. Enough of that noise.
Yeah, like, the only thing that I'll say for this sequence is it is very long. Jet skis are not interesting to watch because they just move, especially people who clearly aren't trained very well to ride jet skis and do exciting things on them, because all the actors just look like the not funny kind of terrified, right? Mm-hmm. They're not like going, whoa, whoa. They're just like really concentrating on like just trying not to fall off this thing.
Yeah.
They're like... Going, not going especially fast, just
and this is a part
just staring straight ahead. It's boring.
And this is a part where like Winslow's shtick doesn't work, because like now whenever you just see him, like if he's actually driving like on a jet ski, like is he supposed to be making the sound of the jet ski, or is it the sound of the jet ski? I don't know how I'm meant to feel about this.
Yeah. But the music that goes over this is pretty banging, like some cool 80s synths and
oh yeah, yeah. Again, the score. 3 for 3 is the real star of the Police Academy series so far.
100%, brother. But yeah, they like somehow catch up with and
they
defeat sexy grandpa.
Yeah, and then we then like just cut to the graduation ceremony for all like the recruits, and we find out that Lassard's Academy won.
But Mauser's
we never see Mauser get his comeuppance, like him be really like disgraced in front of the governor. We never see him, yeah, like we never see him getting beat down and him like kind of like take, you know, stomping on his beret.
Well, because he's like out of a job.
Yeah,
now.
And be like, damn it, Proctor. You never.
How's he going to pay his rent? This could ruin his life.
Maybe he'll be the villain in the next one, because he's like going to like. Kind of like wreak bloody retribution.
Oh, right. He's going to come back and he's going to kill a bunch of innocent people. Now, hear me out.
Okay.
And he's going to frame Taxax.
Oh.
And then Taxax will have to like go on the run.
I didn't even kill these ones. These aren't even mine.
Yeah. My ones are over here. I keep them all in the cupboard.
Yeah. There was a bit where like Tackleberry was talking to Sweet Chuck. And he's like, I'm going to make a man out of you. And I just thought, like, he's actually building a man. Like, that's his thing, that he's, like, doing, like, some, like, weird, like, Frankenstein-y kind of, like, you know, like, Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs shit. And he's kind of like, you, Sweet Chuck, will be the head.
On the totem pole. Yeah, sometimes you just look in Tackleberry's eyes and they... There's something dark in those eyes.
They're so dark that light does not escape. You don't see a reflection back.
Yeah.
That's haunting. But that's the end of the film. We kind of really glossed over that, because the film kind of really glosses over the end of the film.
They end
a bit
very
like the last
suddenly.
One. Isn't it like the last one just kind of like ended with a just kind of like, you know, without... You wanted something. You just want a little taste more, just to kind of like really resolve. It ends on a freeze frame of Lassard, just kind of like
he does a high kick,
just doing a high kick.
He just inexplicably does a high kick, freeze frame, and then the credits roll again to just showing us all of the different bits from the film we've just watched.
Thanks, guys. Fucking hell. So yeah, that's It's better than the second one.
I think it
one.
Is better than the second one, like, noticeably. Not as good as the first.
No. You get to see, like, I think what is maybe nice in this one is you get to see some, like, the people who are, like, slightly more, like, bit players getting a bit more to do. Like Hightower and Hooks and, like Callahan being back.
I like Callahan.
Yeah, like, whereas you get, like, diminished Gutenberg time.
I just realised Callahan was stuck back at the academy during the final chase scene, right? She didn't get to go to the regatta.
No, I thought that she was...
Was she there?
She appears at the end, like she comes in on the cavalry with the jet skis. I'm sure she did.
Maybe I didn't notice her because, as we know for her proclivities, at the boating event, she was probably distracted by all the motorboats.
The comedy starlings of Mr. Todd Jordan, everybody.
thank you. Try the veal.
Soon to be appearing in the reboot of Police Academy. Oh, dear.
Well, well, I mean, you know what? You know what I could definitely do, Tom?
Yeah.
Is I could meet up with you again next week and watch the next one.
Yeah.
Like, I can do... I'm not like...
Yeah,
I could... I'm out!
Like, I've probably got another, like, maybe, like, I could probably watch another 4 films. But that is my limit.
You mean to tell me that if the internet suddenly announced Police Academy 8, you would be like, never going to watch it?
No, I would watch it.
Of course. I would.
I'm in too deep now.
Yeah. Okay. So interesting, though. So at the moment, you know, number one, maybe my favourite. It's probably my favourite.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. Like, that one had, like, more, like... genuine laughs in it.
But number three, second favorite for me.
Second favorite, although actually there weren't... the second one I kind of thought was like pretty weak, apart from the bit that stood out was when Gutenberg does his like pretending to be, when he goes undercover to go in the gang.
Oh yeah, that was good.
And that was actually kind of like a highlight, whereas this film is better, like, overall than three, but I feel has no highlights. You know what I mean? Like, if you were to be, like, kind of, like, say, like, oh, what's the best bit? I couldn't even tell you, and I just finished watching it. Like, other than be like, there's this really brilliant bit where the editing cuts Steve Gutenberg off half-sentence.
Because there's no way I'm going to look someone in the face and be like, yeah, the best bit is where Lestard punches that woman in the face.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we haven't recorded our feelings about this to, like, audio or something.
I know.
Like, released it onto the internet.
Trust me, if you watch the scene, it's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, okay, so what is the next film, Tom?
Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol, I believe.
Citizens on Patrol. So what does that imply? Some sort of neighbourhood watch scheme?
Yeah, like, I guess in a way... them training more recruits. I guess, like, you know, like, yeah, they're going to be interacting with the community and trying to get the community involved in, like, more law enforcement. So the whole thing of, like, them being beat cops in the second film, they're like, man, I didn't really fly quite so well. What is... we want them being, like, mentors to another load of feckless dickheads.
Yeah, okay. That sounds intriguing. Like,
I mean, as intriguing as a police academy. I mean, it's all about, like, going to Miami and Russia now.
Because
like, even though, like, I'm sure that, like, they're going to be diabolical, it's just like the other ones are just kind of like, I'm sure it's just going to be like another police academy for, you know, like,
yeah.
I can't think of what is going to be that different.
Well, okay, let's imagine a hypothetical whereby you are only allowed to take 3 pre-existing characters with you to the next movie.
Oh, okay.
Who are you picking, Tom? So it can be anyone that's been in any one Police Academy film so far. Doesn't matter how big or small, but they're your only 3 and everyone else in the next movie is going to be brand new. Who are you taking with you?
I want Harris back.
Okay, the original villain from the first film.
I want Harris back. I kind of want to see some more of Lassard's, like, sadness. There's a bit of pathos to the film, which is, like, you know, like that man lost at sea kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And then...
Oh, that only leaves you one of the actual cadets.
One of the cadets.
I mean, surely, Tom.
No, you know what? I don't want any cadets. Just bring Sexy Grandpa back.
isn't that a Justin Timberlake song? Bring Sexy Grandpa back.
Yeah. And I just want it to be like kind of like a like some weird kind of like road movie with like Harris and Lassard with like they're like having to transport Sexy Grandpa over state lines. So it's just like the whole film is like 90 minutes of just them in a car driving.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I know it's a bit too early to be pitching a sequel. There you go. That's a keeper.
Well, that sounds cool.
Who would you pick?
Who would I pick? Let's think. Okay, guess what? I was really into Mrs. Spackler-Fackler.
I liked, yeah, she was good.
She can stay. Yeah. I like her. I'm into, I'm going to say, fuck it, I like Mauser. He's a classic. He's got a big, crazy round
You need a baddie, yeah.
He's a fine baddie. And, fuck it, Sweet Chuck. Why not?
Sweet Chuck?
Sweet Chuck, why not?
I thought you'd have gone for your main girl hooks.
I know, but then I thought that I would get accused of pandering if I had Mrs. Spackler-Fackler and hooks.
Yeah. Well, I think Mrs. Spackler-Fackler and Sweet Chuck is a good kind of like timid combination to have with Mauser.
Yeah, I just thought I really like...
So, okay, here we go. Three of them, stuck in a lift, 90 minutes. That's the film.
Okay, I thought you were about to ask me Snog, Marry, Avoid.
Oh, no. It's them stuck in a lift with one other person, and they're spending the whole 90 minutes getting that one person to decide Snog, Marry, or Avoid with the three of them.
The three of them. Oh, my God. Okay.
And obviously, Mouse is going to be really competitive, and Sweet Chuck's going to be really kind of like a bit downtrodden.
I guess I'd have to pick that extra person in there that has to Snog, Marry, Avoid them. I mean, Mrs. Voorhees from the first...
Perfect.
Yeah.
The head.
Mrs. Voorhees, the severed head.
Yes. Well, that should just about do us for this week's episode of the Bitter End podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. It's, as always, please do get in touch with us on social media. We really, really want to know what you're thinking of the season so far. Whether you're watching the movies and loving them, whether you're watching the movies and hating them, get in touch. You can find us on Twitter at Bitter End Pod or on Facebook at Bitter End Pod. And both of those places are the first place that you can find out when our new episodes are coming up. And we occasionally post like pictures and other goofy shit that's like relevant to stuff we're talking about. So, you know, check it out.
Yeah, it's cool. If you want to like tell any of your mates who might be into this podcast about the podcast, that's like one of the best things you can do. Like, you know, a cheeky recommend, the old iTunes reviews, all that stuff that people normally talk about at the end of podcasts. Or you can just sit back and just do fuck all.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll still be here.
We'll still be here talking into the ether. So until next time, I'm Tom Denny.
And I'm Todd Jordan.
And I'm going to go and ride a fucking jet ski. Shut up, Winslow.